Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Outside of Work, where we explore who we truly are beyond our job titles. I am super excited for this week's guest. I know I say that for every single guest, but it just is what it is. I'm always excited for my guests. But this week's guest is Sherry Lead. Now, I met Sherry a little over a year ago when I produced a segment of her the show I was working on. And at the time, Sherry had just begun a 50-state journey. Her goal was to visit one woman in each state and have a meal with her, learn about her, talk, because this was coming at a time, you know, kind of towards the end of the pandemic when we were all so isolated, we're all so insulated in our own thoughts and beliefs and things like that. And she was like, you know what? I want to go out there and see what I can learn from these women. And it turned into like one of the most amazing experiences ever. And so New York was her 13th stop. I got to meet her. Here's a photo of us, you know, on set. She was just a ray of light as soon as I met her. Like, this woman has been through some things. We talk about it in the interview, but she's been through some things, and each time she reinvents and comes out even better on the other side. I think that's the staying factor of this conversation, is the idea that no matter your age, you can continue to reinvent, follow your gut, try new things. Because I don't know, sometimes you're in a situation where things just aren't working out anymore, or you're forced to reinvent. You know, like myself, when I got laid off, it's like, okay, hold up a second. I think we might need to do some soul searching here and go on a different path. It's not easy. It's not, you know, it's not fun. Well, or, you know, sometimes you can make it fun, but it's necessary. And that's what Sherry really teaches me in this conversation. Another key thing we talk about is knowing yourself. At the time when I met her, she was in a 26-year marriage. She was a stay-at-home mom. She was a former litigator. And now she has filed for divorce. She has met somebody new in her life. She has a whole new view of things. That took her really going on this journey and figuring out who the heck is Sherry. Yes, even in your 50s, you can start thinking about who the heck am I? And how can I start moving forward in a way that's more aligned? You know, a bit of synergy like we talk about. You know what? I'm talking too much. I am saying too much. I just want you guys to listen to this episode. So without any further ado, here's my friend, Sherry Lead. Sherry, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm great. It's so good to connect with you this way.
I know. Isn't it crazy? It's like the last time I talked to you, we were both in very, very different positions, right? I was
absolutely.
I was covering. I was doing a segment on you about kind of a journey of self-discovery of your own, where you were traveling across the country. I believe were we still in the pandemic, or was it like the pandemic was kind of like, you know, dying down a bit, and you were like meeting one woman in each state, and this was like the big mission for you. I mean, tell me about that time and kind of like reflecting on that now, on where we are now.
Well, it's amazing. You're right. Life has changed. It's changed. And we'll probably touch on this a bit in so many ways, personally and professionally. But in 2022, I had this crazy idea to travel the U.S., but I wanted to make it personal. And for me, that was meeting a stranger, a woman I had lost contact with decades ago, to share a meal with them. So I met one woman in each state and shared a meal. And these were women from all walks of life, a very diverse population. And I met with you in April of 2023. I started the project in January. So I was still in the beginning parts when I met you.
I remember.
And this journey throughout this journey, it absolutely changed my life. I started out looking for what connects us and what makes us all similar. And what I found in my journey is it was the things that are differences that made it so interesting. Yeah. And I learned so much about myself. Like you said, when we talked right before this podcast a few weeks ago, you said I even sounded different on the phone. Literally. And I tell you, I gained my confidence. And I'm in my 50s, so hopefully it doesn't take other people that long, but it changed my life.
I mean, you're right. Like, literally, the gravity of your voice is, like, different. When we spoke a couple weeks ago, like, even just your voice was different. You know what I mean? It's almost, I don't even know how to say it, but, like, sometimes it's almost like you can feel someone's aura in a way. And you say, like, you finally found your voice. I think you truly, like, literally found your voice. And I don't know if you can relate, but me, like, after getting laid off, like, the reality of life kind of humbles you and you learn a lot. And then, like, your walk is different now. The way you talk is different now. Like, is that how you feel? Like, what has changed with you that, like, is making me feel like this is a different Sherry than the Sherry I met, like, just a year ago?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I do. I feel it inside. It's very different. And when I was going on this journey, these were conversations. They weren't interviews. They're organic conversations. But I found that the one question I kept asking these women was, what feels like home? And at some point in this journey, I realized that all my life, I had been looking for a sense of belonging and home. So a little backstory, I was abandoned as a baby, and I was found in Seoul, South Korea, in a cardboard box with no identifying information. Wow. So, you know, I went through all those, like teenagers do, all those identity issues and looking for a sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, I became an attorney, a writer, built a family. So it looked like I had it all together. And I didn't realize until I did this journey that I was still that baby in the box. Still searching for home, still searching for a place of identity. So I think what you're hearing is I found my belonging. I found my place. I found a sense of home. I found a sense of safety in who I am without trying, just with these conversations with these women from, you know, all different ages and learning their stories.
I mean, that's absolutely amazing. But when you say, like, you were still trying to find home, what was happening at home that didn't feel like home?
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, because I started to get, you know, they say trust your gut, right? Your gut. Mm-hmm. And I would start to get anxiety. I luckily don't suffer from anxiety issues. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't happen a lot, but I was getting serious anxiety on the plane rides home. And I tried to figure out, you know, I was adopted at age one, lived in Washington State, Seattle area, you know, until this age, why does this not feel like home to me? Had this beautiful home that my now former husband and I remodeled. It was my dream home.
Wow.
And so I'm flying back to this beautiful home in the place I grew up in, and it doesn't feel like home, even though I'm leaving strangers and leaving places I had never been before.
Yeah.
So I thought, what is that? And I realized it was actually the person I was coming home to that didn't feel like home.
Wow.
And I wasn't, you know, and I wasn't making money doing this. I was the stay-at-home mom. I had stopped practicing law years ago. So I had so many fears about leaving what was not a healthy marriage. Just so many fears financially. I'm also a cancer survivor. So I worried about dating and what my body looked like and how do I explain that. And a woman in Colorado helped me through that with one of her words or what she said. I didn't realize I needed healing there. But yeah, I realized, why doesn't this feel like home? And it was not the beautiful structure. It was the person I was coming home to.
Oh, man. That is, you know, I love that you say follow your gut, because it literally, and you know, in your intuition, because it will literally lead you to the answers you want. Mm-hmm. And you know, you say now in my 50s, I'm finding my voice, but sometimes it takes us a while to finally listen to our gut and be like, you know what, girl, we need a change. And I think it's fascinating, because similar to why I started this podcast as a way to discover, like, who the heck am I when I'm not, you know, producing TV, because that's all I encompass my life with. And for you, you know, you were a stay-at-home mom, you were in this relationship, and you're like, who the heck am I, and why, what is it that I'm looking for? So you went out to, like, talk to other people. And so I'm curious, like, when you were out there, was there, like, a woman who finally, like, solidified that idea for you, that, like, oh, home is not with this person, you know, this is the actual issue, this is the actual problem? Was there ever, like, a moment of, like, awakening when you're like, yeah, I think this is it?
The combinations combined, but I mentioned the woman in Colorado. So yeah. I sat down with her, and I, you know, I had never met her before, but I was explaining my 26-year marriage was
26
struggling.
26 years,
wow. 26 years, right? And I said, you know, one of the things I'm concerned about, I'm a cancer survivor. I had a double mastectomy. I have scars, and it just does not look right. How do I date and explain this to someone? I was feeling undateable. And she said to me, Sherry, if you meet the right man, you will not have to explain. And I didn't realize those words just sat with me, and they gave me the strength and the healing piece, the extra, you know, I was at that point 5 years cancer free. At that point, it gave me this healing piece I didn't realize I was still lacking. And that was one of two parts that gave me the strength to say, okay, I'm going to choose me and move forward. And I ended up, by December of the end of the year, I filed for divorce. But, you know, one of the things I learned too in this journey, a lot of places I was the only Asian woman like, I wasn't seeing another Asian woman unless I looked in the mirror, right? And so, you know, you think about you talk about being a producer as a young attorney, and even in other areas of my life, I used to get this imposter syndrome. Like, I don't belong there. And one thing I figured out on these travels is, wait a second, imposter syndrome, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Let's just say that's a signal to say you've leveled up. So when you feel that imposter syndrome, like for me, you know, I started practicing law in the 90s, and a lot of times in the county I was in, I was the only woman in the room. I was the only minority woman, you know, person of color in the room of this group of attorneys. And, you know, I had this imposter syndrome. But if I had known that now, I think I would have been more effective as a young attorney. If I had known, okay, this feeling like I don't belong here, what that means is known. Not that I don't belong here, but I've just leveled up. And let that sit for a while and go, okay, let me look around. Yep, I do have the same skills as everyone around here. In fact, you know, I might have had to go through a few more hoops. Oh, hey, I'm here.
That is such a better way of looking at it. Oh my gosh, no one has ever said that to me. Because in the many conversations I've had about imposter syndrome, and believe me, like, the amount of people I talk to who are just like, imposter syndrome, I don't belong here, you know, I had to fight it. But for you, you're like, I made it. Okay. You know what I mean? I made it so deep that, like, even my, like I'm trying to, like, understand this new realm. That's such a great way to look at it.
Yeah. I met this woman in Indiana. I asked her, because I knew her town was small, and I looked at the demographics. I said, have you ever sat down with an Asian person before? You know, we were sharing a meal. She said, no. I told her, I've never sat down with anyone from Indiana before. You know? And so I had those types of moments where we were just easily changing the narrative.
And so when you got back home, you know, you filed for a divorce. I can't imagine that was easy, you know, and it could take so long, you know, for that process to go through. I mean, while you were doing that, was it a sense of relief? Was it a sense of like, oh girl, what are you doing? You are going into, you are making a decision. You don't know what's going to come.
If I had not done this 50 states travel, I don't know if I would have had the strength and the confidence in myself that I did to go through this divorce. The hardest part was not leaving. So we ended up selling this home that we remodeled 2 years prior. Put a lot of our resources into it. It wasn't hard for me to lose the home. The physical part of moving was hard, and there were a lot of logistics in it. Mm-hmm. But there was a sense of relief. And even now, looking back, what happened is a door closed, and I started to think, you know, I started doing theme songs in the morning to listen to. And one of my theme songs is basically says, the universe, whatever you want to call this higher power, the universe, God, has always taken care of me when I look back on it. And just being able to trust that, and looking at my journey, like I mentioned, I was a cancer survivor. I've had, like all of us, curveballs have been thrown my way, but God has always, or the universe has always taken care of me. And I just trusted this was going to happen.
Trusted that.
Again. And you know what? Doors have opened. Like I can't even tell you these door. I thought I was the one maybe holding him back before, because I'm the one that's out there kind of, I switch and do different things. And he, in theory, was the steady one. But I realized, no, that was actually holding me back, because I was trying to, get into his world more. But I forgot where I was going. Well, so yes, it was hard, but the doors that have opened up, and every time a mess happens, man, if you just listen to the opportunity there, can detach for just a moment from the mess and listen to the opportunity, I got to tell you, it's just the timing, everything. Everything has just opened up in ways I couldn't even imagine.
That is so good to know. You know, sometimes we like get so busy looking back at like maybe what we lost, or muddling through the tough times that we're going through, that we don't realize that if you just like trust the process, you trust this thing that you're going through, that like better things will be on the other side. That's what we all hope for, right? Oh man,
it's it's true. And if you can move forward, the difficulty, I coach people too, and the difficulty sometimes is people think that we have to be perfect to move forward, and they get stuck in their crises or whatever their mess is. I say it's easier to change ugly than it is to change perfection. So move forward with ugly. and for instance, when this happened, I started a podcast. I don't know how a podcast, I don't have the right equipment, but I thought, okay, I'm going through this difficult time. This is the perfect time for me to start a podcast and talk about divorce after a long time and at this age. So I started this, and all of a sudden these clients start coming in that are going through a divorce, and I'm reaching more people than I would have. The podcast in the beginning, it's getting better. I trust me, if you listen, season two is going to be off the charts, because I'm getting it put together. Season one, sometimes it sounds like I'm trapped in some kind of crazy room because the audio is bad, but I moved forward, and I started with ugly, and I've been able to adjust as I go along. If I waited till it got perfect, it wouldn't have had the same effect, and I wouldn't have had the same emotion in it, and I wouldn't have had the opportunities that have come because of it. So I just say, no matter what the mess is that you're going through, that big idea, you have to travel 50 states or whatever, just take a step forward, even if it's ugly, because you can adjust ugly.
Exactly. Like start messy, start imperfect, and like work your way through it. What is it about starting podcasts when we have like these life altering moments?
Right? This is deep. I need to talk to
some people, right? Yeah.
It was healing. It was healing for me actually to hear myself talk out loud about these different issues, because then I was able to detach from the situation. It was almost like I was advising my best friend instead of being there going, whew, and figuring it out inside.
Oh man. What's the name of your podcast?
Oh, it's An Imperfectly Perfect Life, which is my business name, Life Unscripted.
I love that. Life Unscripted. Oh, yeah. That's so true. Oh, man. And you said you're going to season two?
I'm going to season two. And I've got like all my, I've been YouTubing how to set things up. I've got everything set. Yeah, I'd love to talk to you on it, because season two is going to be good.
Okay, Yeah, Sherry, I'll come on. No worries. Let's get that on the calendar.
Yeah, let's talk about reinvention.
Yes, absolutely. Because you're like the queen of reinvention. Literally, you just like listed off some of these things that would make anyone want to like crawl in a hole and like never come out. You know what I mean? Like stepping away from your law practice to become a stay-at-home mom. I can't imagine how difficult that would have been, because law school is not easy. That is not easy. And then like, you know, having your cancer diagnosis, and thank God, you know, you've been cancer-free for 5 years now, you know, or more than that now. And you know, then going through this now life divorce in your 50, you know, in your 50s, like what? So many of these things, you know, as you go along, it's just like something that would just make someone be like, you know what, forget it, I'm done. But for you, you're just like, how can I turn this into something like more? How can I keep progressing? And I just have to ask, like, how the heck do you find the encouragement to keep going?
Yeah, I would. It's interesting. This is why I became a coach, because I do that. It could be, you know, in my 20s, I was in a catastrophic car accident.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was in a wheelchair for a while. I had to learn to walk again. In my 30s, I was diagnosed for the first time with hip dysplasia. So I had a double hip replacement really early. I'm bionic at this point, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. Like, geez.
Yeah. And so yeah. I learned from these experiences to look for the opportunity in it. And part of that, it's not being at this higher level, but that's what I needed to survive. Otherwise, it was just too painful. It's just too painful to sit in the problem. That's too difficult for me. It's too painful that I can't take that. So for me to get out of that space, I need to look at for the opportunity. I have a pair of plastic rose-colored glasses, you know, like really cheap rose-colored glasses.
Yeah,
that I keep in my kitchen and in my bedroom, just to remind me that when I did this 50 states travels, I met this white woman in Virginia who is married to a Japanese American man. So she took his surname. She has no Asian features, but she said since she took his surname, people will say to her, "Oh, I see it now." And she said, yeah, and that sat with me. And so it was like, and she said, people see what they're looking for. And that's why the rose colored glasses I have around my house, just to remind me that I could look at this one way or I could look at it another way. So,
metaphor. Yeah,
it is, you know, and so there were lessons like that in the 50 states where somebody would say somebody would say one thing. And I took that sentence to heart without trying. I absorbed it and it changed something in me. And I realized the power that we have when we are able to decide in our brains. Actually, it's been shown that our brains, when we vividly create ideas in our brain or vividly think about our life in a certain way, our brain actually can't decipher actual experience from this vivid visualization. In fact, we start to look to how we can create this. We look for it. Our brains start looking for these things.
Yeah.
So for me, I learned this as a survival mechanism because I prefer being happy.
They do say, though, you know, what you think, what you say to yourselves, the kinds of messages that you tell yourself are, you know, what you then process. Everyone wants to talk about like you know, law of attraction, like literally that you attract those certain things to your life. And I love that you're like, I'd much rather be happy than like doom and gloom, which I think I can learn from, because I tend to dwell in the misery and like have a really hard time figuring out how to get out of it. So that's really good.
And it's not easy. It's not, because it's not. You know, we have chemicals in our brain. We're not, you know, we're not superheroes. Exactly. We have chemicals in our brain. But if you can detach for a moment, you know, and and look at yourself as you would, and advise yourself as you would if you were your own best friend.
That's true.
And that allows you to see opportunity. And like I said, man, doors are opening up. I met this wonderful man.
Tell me more. I'm so excited. Yeah. All I know is you were so happy he has hair. That's what I remember.
I know, because my ex does not. So you know, I was married for 26 years. I knew this process would take a year. I thought, oh my God, I'm 54 right now. Take a year. That puts me at 55. It takes a while to build a relationship. My goodness, I'm going to be old.
So
I'm like, I better start now. Mm-hmm. So I went on the dating apps and I put in my bio, going through a divorce after 26 years, just first dates in 2024. If we vibe and we're both single in 2025, let's go out on a second date. So I was upfront. These guys knew I was upfront. They, you know, the guys that went out with me, and that gave me a range. I did, you know, I was trying to figure out what three things, what I wanted in a man, who was out there to date, and if I'm dateable. So those three things is what I was looking for. So it gave me the ability to shift around the age, the height, you know, the qualities and it made the dates easy. Because they didn't expect anything. They knew I was dating these other people on first dates, but I wasn't kissing people at the end of the date. So there was a trust already there. It made them interested in me because they were curious because this was so different. And I ended up going on 14 first dates between January and mid-February.
You are so like... This is just Sherry being Sherry. Like, you know what I mean? For me, it would take me a year.
But you know, if you go on all those first dates so close together, you start to know who you vibe with right away.
That's true.
And by the 14th date, I realized, yes, there are quality men out there. There really are. And I realized how tall they need to be for me, or what I really value. And I'm not going to drive over 30 minutes to see you, you know, like little things like that.
Exactly.
But it gave me confidence. It gave me confidence. I was dateable. It made me confidence that men are out there that are good guys.
Yeah.
And I learned to realize what I want in a partner.
Mm.
All without this pressure, without kissing any toads. And it gave me more confidence. So I suggest that they don't have to go on, you know, 14 dates or whatever, but any single woman that's been struggling for a while, just put out their first dates for a while. Mm-hmm. Like say you're on a first date challenge, 2 weeks of first dates, 14 days.
What were you looking for?
Well, my ex-husband wasn't that tall, so I wanted somebody taller. My ex-husband, as you pointed out, did shaved his head. So I wanted somebody, they had more hair, my bar wasn't super high with that. I wanted somebody, they didn't have to be super financially successful, but I wanted them to be about the same, you know, same place as me. And what was the other thing? Oh, you know, I wanted a level of intelligence and humor.
Yeah.
Right. I knew that that was a key piece. But,
and what was your age range? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So originally I thought, okay, we have to have been in high school at the same time because to make a relationship work, we have to like the same music.
We at least have to really awesome. So like you're not looking out in the 20s or the, well, you know.
Oh, let's just say this is where I started. So it's 4 years either direction. Okay. So that put me at, I was 54. So that put me at age 50 to 58.
Okay.
And then my girlfriend set me up with this guy who was like 40, and I'm still doing this whole thing. I thought, okay, well, I'm just doing this thing. I might as well go out with him. And he's like, you can go way younger. And I was like, oh, my ego is stoked. And so I did go younger than 40, but I moved the bar down to the 40s.
Okay.
One of my girlfriends tried to set me up with a 30-something year old, and I asked if his dad was single. Didn't do that.
Sherry, stop.
But then I found, for me, men in their 40s, we were at two different life stages. And so then I went back up. I said, well, they have to at least be in their 50s. And then I went all the way up to 60 on the profile thing.
Okay.
That was before I found out that older people may not be truthful about their age. My friend said they usually, when they get in the 50s and 60s, a lot of times, I'll say fudge by 5 years. And I was like, oh, people think I'm 59? But I ended up meeting a man. I won't tell you his age, but he was older. He is older than 60, but younger than 60 in so many ways, active and smart and funny. And as of now, he is, and hopefully for a while, maybe a long time, my perfect fit.
Oh, I love this. This is so good. Oh, I love this. I love this. Because one, yeah. I think you came into it with certain expectations and then were also open to like anything that might have come along, which I think is perfect. Because you were like, I'm going to look between 50 and 58 and your dude is in the 60s. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, who would have thought?
Yeah. I sure did not. and we do listen to some of the same music, but we listen to different music and it's still working out. So you can work through your music differences.
Age is but a number.
Letting everyone know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I know you said that, like, you know, you wanted the woman you met in Colorado said that when you meet that person, you won't have to worry about, you know, your body, and what it's been through. Honestly, how it's helped you survive, if we're being honest, how your body has helped you survive. So did you find that with this person?
I did. I didn't have to explain at all. And I found out men aren't as picky as we might think.
That is so true. Oh my gosh. I have this conversation all the time with my girlfriends. Like, we think we need to do this, this, this. And the guys are like, listen, you're breathing. You look cute. Like, you know what I mean? You're not like crusty. Yeah. And that's like all they need.
And if anything, you know, if they really love you and they get to know you, honestly, he's kind of like, okay, you can take those fake eyelashes off. You know, go no makeup. I mean,
okay.
And he talks to me and we have good conversations. I think that's the most important thing I've learned is being with someone who will talk to you and listen, and you don't have to agree. Three things I think you need. You need attraction, friendship, and compatibility.
Okay.
For a relationship to work. Compatibility meaning you could travel together, you could work together. Yeah. So.
Yeah, you can have conversations together. I really like that. This is so great. You know what I mean? And so, I love to ask this question. So now in this stage that you're in, who is Sherry?
Ooh. Sherry's a force. Sherry's a force that's going to make a change in the world. When I was in Minnesota, the woman, Anne, that I met with there, she works with the elderly, and she told me this beautiful story of this elderly man who got a hero's welcome when he, just for getting on the shuttle bus to the grocery store, because he had been gone for a little while for a brief illness. But she said, everyone just wants to know that they are missed.
Yeah.
And I thought that's the way I want to live. So Sherry is someone who's going to live in a way, or who is living in a way that when she's gone, the world will miss her because she made a difference.
Sherry. Oh my Lord. That is deep. That is deep. I really like that. You are a force. And I think that's literally what you're doing, you know, like in every stage of your life. And so what do you like to do outside of work? I mean, you are a friendship expert. You are a you have clients and you help them try to figure out their life as a coach. Who are you when you're outside of work?
Oh man, you know, I finally have a job that I like to do, which is not like working. I do it all the time, but when I'm outside of work, really, I'm a social person. I get together and I share meals with friends when I'm outside of work. If I'm cooking right now, I like to cook, but I don't like to spend a lot of time. So I'm really into slow cooking right now. So nice. I guess everything with me
cooker.
I think everything, you know, kind of around goes around food and community. Right now, after my 50 States project, I have started this thing that I call flip the box, and I invite people, my friends that don't know each other, to potluck at my house. And those are the kinds of things that I enjoy doing when I don't work. So my personal life really is aligning with what my mission is in my work life, which means I'm in synergy, and I couldn't be happier.
That is, first of all, hosting potlucks and stuff sounds amazing. I've been thinking about now that, you know, my boyfriend and I are settled back in New Jersey, I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, I could do something for like my half birthday coming up. We can invite folks over, you know, just like, you know, to have dinner with us sometime. I love that idea of like community, because like we get so bogged down in work and obligations and things that we're doing that we forget to like actually connect with the people that, you know, we connect with. How is that with you and your friends? Have you found that that's helped you guys like, you know, remain close or, you know, opened up different conversations that maybe you wouldn't have when you're too busy focused on, you know, all the other obligations?
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting bringing these, they're strangers to each other, these people that are coming over and bringing food to share. And for some reason, it always seems to be the right combination of people that come over. And it, for me too, I'm in a rental now because we had to sell our house. And I had to check my ego because my other house was pretty beautiful. And obviously when you divorce, you have the same pot now split between two different places. You have a lot less funds. And so I had to check my ego. So to be able to invite people to this rental house makes this rental house a home. Oh. It also tells me what's important. It's not the aesthetic of the place. It's what I put inside it and who I put inside it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's a healing piece here for me to watch people come in and form relationships inside this place that I, right now I take Polaroids when people come through this house and have them sign a guest book because I want to know who's filling up this rental temporary space for me while I'm here.
What a fabulous idea. And do you like, look at that juxtaposition, Sherry. Look at that. You had a beautiful home that you renovated and everything like that. Did not feel like a home. And now you have this rental and it's feeling more like a home than what you've known like for so long. Oh my goodness.
My entire life. And this is the first time I have not owned a house since my 20s in 30 years. But I never have felt more at home than I do now.
Than you do now. Like you said, everything is in synergy. Everything is working out like it's supposed to. I feel as if you crafted your life, basically, and your job. How the heck did you do that? For those of us who are like, you know, because sometimes it's like, oh, people are always like, oh, you know, do what you love or like, you know, find that job that you have passion for. But like, let's be real, we have bills to pay. So like, how do you find a job that like so aligns with the things that you want in life? There's so much so that it doesn't become work. Like, I think that's such an anomaly.
I think that it goes back to that idea that it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. And I liked the other thing I like to say is let it be easy.
Yeah.
So even if you're stuck in a, I shouldn't use the word stuck, but if you're in a place where, cause yeah, money is, you need money. We can't all just do what we love.
Okay.
We need to get the bills paid, but maybe there's something you can explore while you're getting the bills paid or you're in the job that you don't necessarily like. Okay. What's the opportunity here?
Yeah.
How can it get me to what I want to do? Who am I meeting in this place? Even though if the tasks aren't right. And you're right. That's why I changed it from mindset coach to reinvention coach because I've reinvented my life so many times. And even now I'm in the process of it with the divorce. Mm-hmm. And this whole new career, as you said, I was a litigator before, stayed at home. I started writing at age 50. I started this whole career at age coaching, age 50, you know, and now I'm getting into the professional speaking realm at age 54. I turned 55 in December. I now have a speaking agent. I'm doing my book launch in New York City in the Soho House, which I hope you could come and join me.
Of course, I'm coming. And
I have a TEDx in Florida, and I say all these things not to brag, but to say, man, this happened to me after age 50. And I'm living my dream. I'm connecting with people. I'm changing their lives too. So it's not, you know, I always say, you know, you're getting older when you hear people say it's never too late. Look at Sherry. But it truly,
she's doing it. No.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they say, you know, and it truly is not.
Yeah.
It truly is not. And we're constantly, if you believe you're here to learn, then we are constantly reinventing ourselves and, you know, leveling up. And we just need to trust in our own uniqueness to do it.
I love that. That's so true. What are the first steps to reinvention? Maybe stop crying, but like, what are the first steps to reinvention?
And I think the first step is to the confidence piece.
Yeah.
The confidence. And when I hired the speaking agent, he said, Sherry, you know, I forgot the first definition. He said two things. You're this thing, which means basically that, you know, you could throw people off for a second because you're very enduring, but you're surprising. The second, though, description of me, he said, and you're weird. And I told him,
I love that.
Yes, I love that. And because the root of weird is spelled W-Y-R-D. Weird, the root meaning is fate and destiny. Ooh. So if you think of weird being also unique, when you embrace your weirdness, when you embrace your uniqueness, you're embracing your fate and your destiny. And you think of everyone we look up to, whether they're celebrities or people in our lives, there's something weird about them. There's something different. Sure. There's something unique. So I think the first step for reinvention is accepting your weirdness and what makes you unique.
Oh, I like that. Oh my goodness. You know, I like that because I'm awkward and I'm like, I'm going to start this podcast. It's not going to be great. It might, you know, it might be kind of weird, but at the same time, you know, I get to be as creative as possible and show people the other side of me that literally nobody except my inner circle gets to see. I like this. That's very nice.
Yeah. And the world opens up to you once you accept your uniqueness, because there's a place for everybody. I really believe we're here. We have our personalities, who we are, because we're supposed to affect the world in a certain way. And we can't do that if we don't embrace our uniqueness, and we can't keep on leveling up like we, I hope, are supposed to do if we don't accept who we are.
Like, I'm getting a masterclass right now. I feel as if I should be paying you as a reinvention coach, seriously. And another thing that you are as well is like a friendship expert. And I know myself and a bunch of my friends, as we get older, if it's not from school or from work or, you know, from these things that it require us to put in, you know, much effort, like how the heck do you make friends and then how do you keep them?
Yeah, so three things. One, the definition of friendship is simply mutual respect for another person. Mutual admiration. That's the Webster definition. So knowing that definition brings the bar down lower. So it makes it easier to make friends because you're not, you don't have a checklist and you don't feel the pressure. Number two, a friend of mine named AJ who's moved to different places around the US always has a really great group of friends. And I asked him, how do you do it? He said his parents taught him that when he moves to someplace new, always join three places, either a health or medical club association, like something in that realm. Number two, an arts organization or association, whether it's music, reading, book clubs, a museum, something in that area. And number three, a social club, whether it's a, you know, an actual social club or a meetup group. So those three areas, because making friends is a numbers game, right? There was research done. The name slips me, but there's a professor at the University of Kansas or Kansas State who did this study, and it was 1 in 10 people you meet will become a acquaintance, I believe, like a regular acquaintance. And from that, there's a percentage that becomes a friend, and then it's supposed to be like 90 hours or something to establish a close friendship. But anyway, it's a numbers game is the bottom line. It's a numbers game, just like dating. It's a numbers game. So putting yourself out there is how to make friends. Number three, to make friends, it comes down to curiosity. Yeah, I think when you're curious about another person, it's a lot easier to make a friend. A woman in Arizona, I met Betty, 94. Of course, all of her friends are younger than her. But she is sharp as a tack. She's sharp as a tack, steady on her feet. And she lived on the top of a hill that people would hike, and she would invite them in and talk to them. And oh, she had ended up with a group of middle-aged men that come to her table every Saturday for coffee. But I thought, okay, that's the secret to live young. Yeah. Continue to make friends and friends of all ages. It's not that we get so old that we lose people. We get so old that we have more opportunity to make friends.
Oh, man, that's great. Look at Betty. Oh, my gosh. Imagine having just like a group of people coming up the hill to meet you. Like, that's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, I tell you, when I get that age, I want a group of 40-year-old men at my table.
Right, same. That's fantastic. Oh, man, this is good. And like the social aspect of it, like joining some type of social club or whatever, I think that's a really good one. Like my boyfriend and I, we joined when we used to live in Philly. We joined like this pickleball community down in Philly. And it's like our first time playing pickleball. We didn't know anything. And these people, they were just like so sweet. They taught us, you know, how to basically play the game and you know, took us in. And it's just like, it was easy. Like, easy to make friends that way when you have like this common interest that that you're into. So I think the social aspect, that's a great one. That's really good.
Yeah. And those three things, and he has friends everywhere he goes. Wow. And good friends, right? And they have the same interest because he's chosen which of the, you know, which types of groups actually or organizations actually speak to him.
Exactly. Wow. I would like to know, you're on this journey of reinvention now. You're like in a whole new chapter that's clearly thriving, you know? And you have written a book. You put your experience into a book and you're going to be publishing it next year. What was that process like to even write your thoughts onto paper and, you know, write these experiences that you've had onto paper? I can't imagine that was easy.
It wasn't, you know, it actually wasn't hard because I really felt, especially this book, I really feel it. And it's a part of me. It's like a love letter, actually, this book, a love letter to myself in many ways of this discovery and to the women that helped me along this journey without knowing what they were helping me with. Wow. This entire self-discovery. And I had posted on Facebook the other day, I have Getty Images coming in to take photos of this book launch with doing video and everything. And I thought, God, and I posted on Facebook that in 2022, I had this crazy idea that I was going to meet strangers across the U.S. 2020, with the help of friends who gave me their college roommates, their nieces, their aunts, I was able to do it. And then, so in 2023, I did the travel. 2024, I wrote and edited. And now 2025, I get this book launch in New York City, with Getty Images there. And it's like, wow, door closes, big doors open.
Big doors
just
open.
Just trusting, you know, and taking these little, everything was a little step. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, you know, everything was just one step forward. It wasn't like this, it looks big and grand now, but everything was like, okay, what can I do towards this that's simple?
Yeah. And like the book wasn't the end goal, was it? Was the book the end goal?
Well, I knew I was going to write a book. I knew I was going to write a book from this. And in fact, I told the women, you know, before I met with them that this may get some publicity. I am going to write a book. So I thought that pushback would be, oh, I'm private. I thank you, but no thanks. But instead, the response that repeated itself more than once was, oh, I don't know if I'm interesting enough for you.
Oh.
And I thought that was really sad because everyone was accomplished in their own way. Everybody's life is interesting. And I'm just a person from Washington State, not anybody have any notoriety that just is coming to share a meal with you, to have that as your first reaction that I'm not interesting enough to sit down with a stranger to share a meal. I thought was tragic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's fascinating you say that because there's been like so many times that I've reached out to people as a producer to, you know, tell their story. And they're like, wait, what? Why are you reaching out to me? You know? So I've definitely seen it in that aspect. And it's almost like, I don't know, people don't realize the lives they live. They think they have to be like this like big influencer or like have all this following and stuff. But it's like, no, you, Betty, you have like a story that needs to be told. You have a perspective and a life experience that, who knows, like that can like totally relate with other people. That's why whenever I do my stories, I'm like, thank you so much for letting me, you know, tell your story, letting me into your life, because you don't have to. And what you have to say is like so important. I mean, oh gosh, I can't imagine what these women are gonna say when they do finally see this book, because it's like, your story is important too.
And I bet people are so grateful when you produce their stories, because what I learned is a lot of times when people seem standoffish, it's because it's their own insecurity. Yeah. And everyone wants to be heard and seen. And to make friends, when you approach somebody with curiosity, you're telling them, I am interested in you and I see you. I want to learn more about you. Even to continue to deepen long-term friendships, there are things you don't know about your long-term friend. Oh, you know, who taught them how to ride a bicycle?
Oh yeah.
I mean, you could ask them that, and it goes into a deeper conversation about maybe their parents or their family. everyone just, it feels so good because we don't see each other anymore. Especially, you know, that's one thing AI cannot do for us.
Yeah.
It cannot replicate the actual human connection.
Exactly.
And so to establish friendships and to keep them going, keep approaching people with curiosity. You can never learn enough about somebody.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. Oh, I love that. And something else that I heard you talk about in some, you know, as I was preparing for you to come on and just looking through all the different media you've been in, you talked about how you have had this ongoing, I guess, kind of dilemma, not dilemma, but, you know, you've been trying to figure out about your birth date. You know, and kind of what that means to you in terms of like what it means to other people. And so I'd love if you could like talk about your evolution in that, because birthdays, mm-hmm. I think, are so, so important. But your take on it is so unique.
Well, as I mentioned, I had been abandoned and I was left with no birth date, no identifying information. Mm-hmm. I didn't find out until I was a little older that the birth date I have had, which is December 16th, you know, so close to Christmas, was a birth date that the orphanage just gave me. It wasn't, it's not my actual birth date. So I don't know my birth date. And there's this big piece of identity there without knowing your birth date. And
that's
people
huge.
Use it a lot that's when they ask about your sign or whatever. You know,
yeah, right? What's your moon? What's your love?
Yeah.
Like, what?
It comes up a lot in conversation, and there's just an acceptance there that it's something that I most likely will never know is my birth date.
Yeah. But I guess the evolution you made in this particular video that I was talking about was that, you know, mm-hmm. you kind of like, since you didn't know your birthday or your family, you know, you kind of like imagined what your family would be,
yes.
right? Yeah. And what's the conclusion you came to?
Well, I'll make that story really quick. So I used to tell my own story about what my birth was like or my birth family. And at some point when I found out I had hip dysplasia, I needed two hip replacements in my 30s. I figured I'm terrible at direction. I go the wrong way all the time. And I learned that some of the things that the causes of hip dysplasia is a breech birth. And I thought, okay, that explains it. I came out the wrong way. You know? And so I gave this kind of morbid story to myself about, you know, I was in this breech birth. My birth mother was poor and couldn't have medical care. And she died giving birth to me. I mean, this is the story I carried and would tell people a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And I would sometimes make it even worse with what the dad was like and all this. And I went to this party and she had an entertainer who is a psychic and a lot of times a medium. I'm interested, but I can't prove anything. They'll say, oh, somebody's here from your past. They're short and they have dark hair. They have black and white hair. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. You're looking at me. Of course they look like that.
Exactly. Healthy skepticism, for sure.
Yeah. This medium tells me a birth story about your parents were in love, your birth parents, but they weren't married. Your mom came from a family of means and they were leaders in their community. It wasn't in that time good for her to be a single mom and he wasn't acceptable to the family. So they sent her off to a home for single moms and you're given birth, but you were given birth. You're conceived in love. You came from a family that had standing in the community. So you're somebody, basically, is what she's saying. I kind of shrugged it off. But the next day I got into my car and I noticed I was sitting up a little taller.
A little taller.
And I realized, wow, I'm somebody and I was born in love. That's what I'm going to choose to believe. And it affected me. And I didn't realize that the story I'd been telling myself, that I was telling kind of tongue in cheek, was really affecting who my sense of self-worth and where I came from. And so that was a big lesson in what the stories we tell, how the stories we tell affect who we are and how we present in the world.
Oh, man. That is so true. It's like, you know, you were telling yourself this story and then you get told another one. It's like, wow. Were you still skeptical of that psychic?
Now I think she's brilliant.
Like, you know what?
If only I could find her again.
Exactly. Oh man, your story is a story of identity in mm-hmm. all the ways. And I'm curious, and hopefully, you know, you don't take offense to this, but you're in your 50s now. Have you ever made an effort to try and find out where you are from?
I have. I've taken every single DNA test. My DNA is even in the Lost Children's Bank in Seoul, South Korea. Mm. They passed a law to allow orphans from my time to submit there. So, yeah, I mean, if I could find, the only person I'm blood related to is my biological son. Mm. And if I could find anybody that was less than third cousin is too far of a match, but less than that, or closer match than that, I would love to meet them. Once there was somebody another adoptee that reached out from 23andMe, but she was like five cousins away. It was too far. And I almost met with her, but I asked my husband at the time, what if she wants, or maybe I should meet her in case I need an organ donation or something someday. And he said, what if she wants an organ donation?
What if she wants an organ, right? Exactly.
So I actually did not meet with her, but it wasn't because of the organ donation. I learned that that was too far of a match to really be considered a actual, you know, biological connection. Gotcha. And so I did not want to open Pandora's box not going to necessarily serve what I was looking for in a birth relative.
I got you. That totally makes sense. Oh wow. Mm-hmm. And so your son, I mean, what do you tell him about who he is, who, you know, where he comes from and all that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So my son, on my side, it's my mom's adopted, period. I mean, that's it, you know, and I'm Korean, he's half Korean. Mm-hmm. My daughter, we adopted a girl from China who has the similar story to me. And so the nice thing is that, she, you know, we are able to relate on this, I guess it's a void, you know, a void for not mm-hmm. knowing our history, not knowing our birth family.
That is, yeah, definitely. You know, some other friends who I know, you know, kind of feel this kind of same void is, my African American friends who live here in America, you know what I mean? The Black experience of never truly knowing who your ancestors are. And I, you know, that fills me like so much deep sadness. And at the same time, it's also kind of like, you know, you can also like create this, you know, beautiful life for yourself as well. You know, you might not know the past, but you know, the future can be just like even better. So that's beautiful. That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. This woman in South Carolina, she said that when she had lived there for several years, commuting across country for work still, until her husband said to her, are you ready to put down roots? Mm. And once she said yes and decided to, she started to build this amazing community, but she had to affirmatively decide to put down roots. And that taught me, hey, I actually can put down my own roots now.
Yeah.
And also, you know, for adopted people, they graft branches on trees to make trees more beautiful. So, you know, we're adopted into these families because we make these families more beautiful.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I love this. This has been such an amazing conversation. And I think, you know, my final question for you, when you strip away Sherry from, you know, social media and from everything else, and you know, this beautiful brand that you've made for yourself, and you know, maybe you look at your son, you look at your daughter, and what legacy is it that you want to leave behind?
I want to leave behind trying to think of the words for it. But that we're all connected, and just this feeling of if I can help people feel more connected to their neighbor, that's the legacy. When they think of me, Sherry's the one that made me realize I'm connected to this person next door that doesn't look like me, this person who voted differently than me, this person who celebrates a different God than me. That we're all connected. So my legacy would be a person who is here to connect people to each other.
We need more of that nowadays, especially. Oh my gosh. I feel like we are so freaking divided. Like, and I don't know what these next years are going to look like, but they seem very, very grim. And I'm hoping that we can take your words into these next, you know, however many years to connect with each other, because we're more alike than we know. At the end of the day, we just want to be respected, you know, we just want to live life.
We want the same things. We want health. We want good things for our family. Yes. And in the end, it's like running on a treadmill, which I don't do, but we end up in the same place. We all end up in the same place. Yes. I mean, you know, death is a great equalizer. Okay. So the things that we, you know, my favorite quote comes in the form of a question. If today were the last day, would you be doing what you're doing now? Would you be arguing about politics? Would you be arguing about religion? Would you, you know, be mad because your neighbor took the trash can out really early in the morning and woke you up? You know, is that how you would want to spend this day if you knew today was your last day? No, it's not. I was in this little car accident. Somebody hit me. A woman jumped out and came and helped me, gave me her name. She was so kind. I felt so grateful. Not once did she ask me who I voted for. Not once did she say, you know, oh, you can't do this or that or anything. She just saw another human being. Exactly. And, you know, and I'm not trying to belittle the stuff that's going on in our country at all, but at the end of the day in our daily lives, if today were the last day of your life, would you be doing what you're doing now?
Exactly. That's a beautiful, yeah, that's the question I ask. How is it that we want to keep moving forward and living with each other? Absolutely. Sherry, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much. I can't believe this. Like, you have such a warm spirit. You're so inviting. You're so open. And I can't even believe you agreed to come on my podcast. But I'm just so grateful.
I am so excited. This is like the best. Are you kidding me? I would do this every day. Let's do this every day.
For real, actually. Yeah. I love it. I love it. But I'm so excited for you. You have big things coming. I can't wait to come to your book launch. Girl, I'm there. I'm already having
a lot of fun. We're going to dance. We have a great DJ.
Let's go. I'm so excited. And so, yeah, I just can't wait to see what else you do, because like, this is your 50s. I can't wait to see what your 60s look like, your 70s, your 80s. When you're 100, you're going to be like, I don't know, running some country or something. But that's the next step for Sherry. But yeah, thank you so much. And you're just so great. Thank you, Sherry.
Back at you. Love you.
All right. Love you too. We'll chat soon. Hey there. One more thing before you go. First, thank you so much for watching and listening. You didn't have to. You could have done literally anything else with your time. So I am so appreciative. Number two, if you liked what you heard or you resonated with anything, please like, comment, subscribe. Do all the things. All the links will be in the show notes so we can continue exploring this wild, weird, wacky, and awesomely wonderful world outside of work.
One of my girlfriends tried to set me up with a 30-something year old, and I asked if his dad was single. Didn't do that.
Sherry, stop.